Self-Knowledge Not Yet Perfected, Chapter 15. This village of yours is associated with the name of a saint. And yet, why has the village such a pitiable plight today? Is it because the lives of the saints have cast no influence on our minds and on society? It cannot be said that the lives of the saints have all been in vain, and that there survives in the people no pull towards them. And yet, why such a miserable state of affairs? Why is there no Samya Yoga in society? Why is there inequality all around? This should be investigated. One reason for this is spiritual in nature. It seems to me that our spiritual thoughts suffer from one flaw. There is nothing wrong about the saints. The defect lies in our understanding of their thoughts and in making them intelligible to others. Many amongst us are under the impression that spiritual knowledge has already reached the acme of perfection, so that there is no more room left in it for progress. As if the science of spirituality has reached its perfection in Hindustan through the Vedanta and through the experiences of the saints. The scientists, however, say that science has not reached perfection in any manner. Their progress, they confess, has been very little, comparable to a drop in the ocean. In spite of the Sputniks and notwithstanding all talks about going to the moon and the ever new power that is being experienced by man, the scientists continue to say that the secrets of nature are endless, of which hardly a tiny portion has yet been explored. The spiritualists say just the opposite of this. Spiritual knowledge has already become complete. The last chapter has been written and the closing line has been drawn, as if there remains nothing more to be added. But this, indeed, is a great mistake. Just as science continues to advance with ever new inquiry, so also should spirituality. The spiritual knowledge which is as yet at our disposal is only a portion. It is not, therefore, right merely to read time and again the works of ancient authors, or merely to repeat their words in different forms. A science in which there is no room for new changes becomes stunted and contracted. This is what has happened with regard to the spiritual thought of our country. This has indeed remained a very great drawback. Science too has its faults, but these faults are corrected through experience. There was a time when the scientists used to believe that the sun went around the earth. They knew that there were other scientists who held the opposite view, but they used to advance a beautiful logic. If the earth went around the sun, they used to argue, how is it then that we get back to our homes in the evening after having gone out every morning? For the earth must have in the meantime gone far ahead. But they themselves come to see the fallacy in their argument and corrected their own mistake. Errors should be corrected. To regard the knowledge that has already been attained as perfect has remained a great drawback with us. It is for this reason that our saints could not adequately influence society. It is again due to this error that man has developed a narrow point of view in economics. It is the well-being of my house, my field, my wealth, my state that matters, so that one is unable to think of the other. But with what consequence? One person's prosperity can turn out to be another person's woe, a fact which has given rise to a contradiction in economics. What do the progressive nations of today mean by economics? It is nothing other than making one's own nation prosperous at the expense of the others. As in economics, so in spirituality too. Individualism and narrowness prevail. The idea of my liberation suggests spiritual individualism and selfishness. It is not that I am introducing this point for the first time. People in ancient times also had realized this, and Prahlad had clearly given expression to it in the presence of Narasimha. Prahlad said, "Gods and saints without number have desired their own liberation and have created a semblance of liberation in lonely forests and with the aid of speechlessness, etc. But I for myself do not want to be liberated alone, leaving these poor folk all to themselves." Prahlad's words are still binding on us, for we have not as yet corrected ourselves. My liberation is a contradiction in terms, for annulment of the mine is necessary for liberation. If I want that I become wise and the others persist in ignorance, I would be thereby losing my liberation. The I can lead not to liberation, but to bondage. This truth has not yet received our full consideration. Those who practice spirituality in our country have always emphasized that the I and the mine should be got rid of, but they have not sufficiently reflected on its significance. On the other hand, it is the I that has in effect been strengthened. Some siddhis are acquired, siddhis that could be acquired even through sheer obstinate doggedness. This is like earning money. One puts forth effort and takes trouble, and then he comes to acquire prosperity, Shri, and becomes a Shriman or a capitalist. The spiritualist too thus turns out to be a sort of capitalist. One says one has met such and such holy person who has attained Siddhi and has become a knower of the three times. But what is the purpose behind this? People solicit his blessings and say that his blessings have served their families and homes well and have borne fruit. He as well as the people think of serving their own interests. As a consequence, our society remains self-centered. Thus, the spirituality of Hindustan was full of subtle selfishness. One could, therefore, even venture to say that it was not purely spiritual. This is true that it was far superior to earning money. Both belong, however, to the same kind. Both are individual-centered. Both foster the I and the mind. Can it be said for certain that by becoming a big leader of a big country, one is elevated from the spiritual point of view? Certainly not, for his thoughts may still remain as much narrow as that of a common peasant. The peasant thinks how nice it would be if he could acquire a piece of land belonging to his neighbor, and he spares no effort to bring this about. Likewise, if a national leader thinks of how to extend the frontiers of his country, and in case another country has more of petrol, how to acquire that portion of it, should we say that his thoughts have acquired spiritual sanction behind them? Like the thoughts of that peasant, the thoughts of our national leaders also are selfish in character. There is difference in degree, but qualitatively, they are the same. So long as we keep the storehouse of our spirituality sealed, it is self-interest that masquerades as spirituality. The selfishness of the spiritual seeker becomes subtle in nature, and insofar as it is bereft of spiritual value, it lacks the capacity for uplifting the society, nor does it really uplift the individual. And yet, man does find therein a sort of solution of his problems. Though the solution is like that of a person on the verge of death, who consoles himself by thinking that his children are all happy and are in good service, and that he has no other desire unfulfilled so that he could die in peace. Can such a person be said to be liberated? If the penance of a seeker leads to this kind of solution, it certainly has no great worth. For the question, what next, continues to persist even after such a solution. So long as the I and the mind do not totally vanish, all solutions remain of the same kind. Now, the question is, how to get rid of the I? The I can be cancelled through the we. In reality, though, the I is to be cancelled by the Tao. The Tao, of course, refers to God. But where is God experienced? Where is He to be seen? He, in fact, remains unmanifested. It is only after the I disappears that the Tao makes its appearance. How then can the Tao be said to annul the I? It is therefore better to cancel the I through the we. This would lead to true liberation. This would lead to the upliftment of the individual as well as of the society. This would be spirituality in its true sense. Davoli Ratnagiri, 2nd of April, 1958.